dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers.
To the hackers and the crackers.
I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones? And NASDAQ leave you flat on your back? Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial code, source code, ISOs, RAM, zip 6.
Welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 105 for July 19, 2005. As you can guess, Stank Dog is no longer hosting the show. He's gone off to that great dog pound of the sky. He's unplugged. And so, the show, as you can probably guess, is now being hosted by Strom Carlson, that's me, and Black Ratchet.
Technically, I'm the host. Screw him. I'm the DDP member here. Screw you, Strom.
Oh, well, okay, if that's the case.
Haha, I'm taking over. Yes, this is now our show. This is now Strom and Black Ratchet show. Stank decided to hand over the keys for Season 3. This is the first episode of Season 3, by the way, in case people are playing at home. And, you know, we're actually going to take it over for a while, see how that goes, and probably tons of people are turning us off right now as Stank Dog's not here.
Yeah, and just a disclaimer, since this is our first time doing the episode, we hereby apologize beforehand for any mistakes or problems or general screw-ups that you may experience.
Yes, we've actually had to tape this intro 3 times. My phone keeps on cutting out, and Strom hacked up a lung. It's been interesting. I think we've been taping this for about 5 minutes so far, but you're just hearing the first 30 seconds.
Yeah, we better not tell them about the whipped cream.
I'm not going there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll just gotta go straight into the email theme here, so... all right, our first email tonight. It's from a real person, so Stank doesn't drop dogs on air, and I'm thinking about changing that, but you know, considering that we never actually made an announcement that we might start dropping people's first names, you know, we're gonna actually just say from a real person. And this is, you know, Stank. We will just ignore the fact that it's addressed to him. Heard the SQL Server paging limit offset from discussion from episode 101. Here's some possible solutions. The limit result set to the n number of rows, it would be select top end field name, where it would be any field name in the table, I would assume, from table name, where it would be a table in your database. There are more complex solutions if you're looking for paging as well as limiting results to n rows. It does get into T-SQL, it's in stored procedures. And we have a couple of URLs here. We have sorting and paging record sets in SQL Server, https://pwilson/archive/2003/10/10/31456ASPX. I should have really tiny URL that. Oh, well.
What, would a tiny URL it quickly?
Now we'll just let people suffer. We also have server-side paging with SQL Server, which is http://www.windowsitpro.com/article/article/ID40505/40505.html?add=1. Actually, no, now an end of email. I'm sorry, I'm kind of inserting my own little sayings in there. I'm actually curious what happens when you enter that add=0. Probably get an ad-free web page.
For you guys who are too lazy to type that all in, the tiny URL for the first one is http://tinyurl.com/cpwym, as in Maryland. The tiny URL.
Charlie Papa Whiskey.
Yeah, Charlie Papa Whiskey, your mama. And then the tiny URL for the second one is dog7zg6.
that aren't we just British?
Yes, well, it erases the ambiguity of hearing it over the phone.
We should do Zulu. I'm going to make an announcement. Everyone should learn proper, standard NATO phonetics. That just makes life so much easier.
Yes, I resolve to do that before the next episode.
Yes. And anyway, getting back onto the topic, we're just sort of drifting over here. We have a very off-the-cuff discussion, Strom and I guess. That is very true, and it usually works fine if you want the top, you know, X records. However, if you really want to, you know, like, say, return the middle X records, you know, Microsoft SQL fails really miserably. You know, Postgres and MySQL, I think this was kind of discussed in episode 101, it's trivial to offset the records. Like, you know, you can say, skip the first 20 records of a result set of 100, and only return 80. And actually, a week before 101 aired, I ran into this problem where I wanted to skip like 173 records in a record set. I was trying to print something out, and I printed the first 173 out, and it, you know, the program crashed because I did not take care of a bug that I should have taken care of. It was kind of glaringly obvious once I found it, but as in that. And I wanted to find out, you know, how do I skip the first 173 records? And I found out that you can't do it in Microsoft SQL. So I had to basically spend about a half hour to an hour learning stored procedures and all this wonderful stuff that Microsoft makes you do, rather than what would take about 5 seconds, like, you know, with either Postgres or MySQL. That's really a major issue in my book. It's stupid. It really is. Any comments on that, Strom?
Well, I'm not really much of a major SQL person. I've done a little poking around with SQL, but I am not really the database person, so I have not much to add to this.
Yeah. All I can say is that if I couldn't have limiter offset, you know, YAPL probably would have never happened, because that just would drive me nuts. I would have probably given it up a long time ago designing that database. Our next email this evening, and I'm actually going to read this one, and I'm not going to interject my own things here. It's from Dogtanian, and I believe that's how you pronounce it. And it's, hey, Stank Dog, and insert random co-presenter. Greetings from Big Bad London Town. I've been listening to your show for the past 5 weeks, ever since I stumbled across listening on the iPodder podcast database. Anyhow, I was recently told about an application called Tor, which is at tor.eff.org, which reports to provide a level of anonymity for web browsing and other TCP through SOX data. Great, I thought. This is too good to be true. Now I can make it a bit more difficult for any big evil data warehouses to index how much unlicensed software, music, and recreational porn that I may have or may not have downloaded on a daily basis. Having read most of the documentation on the Tor project page, I came to the conclusion that the methodology that Tor uses certainly would add a certain element of privacy to net usage, even though it's by no means the golden egg. But then I noticed somewhere on the homepage here, you know, heb://tor.eff.org/people.html, that Tor project had been surrounded by DARPA, DARPA.mil, which appears to be some sort of subsidiary by the U.S. Department of Defense. I immediately thought it was a bit strange for the Department of Defense to be involved in a project which masquerades as a facility for anonymous Internet usage, since I assume that the DoD's ideology is diametrically opposed to the freedom of speech and other sort of civil liberties that are being ground away on a day-by-day basis by my government and yours. Could this be some sort of honeypot trap set up by the Department of Defense that has been created by to try to catch Osama bin Laden? I think we should be told. Toodle-pip, Dogtanian. And I'd just like to send out a double toodle-pip to you as well, Dogtanian. And, you know, I'm not sure if Tor's been discussed on the show. I've really fallen behind the show lately due to work. It's been, you know, keeping me busy, and I have a couple other things that I've been doing in my spare time that's technically work in its own right. But anyway, we'll get into that later. For those of you who don't know, Tor, which stands for The Onion Routing, I think, I'm not sure, it's a really simple, really elegant anonymous proxy system. It's publicly available for download off, you know, tor.eff.org. Tor, you know, we already talked about it with all the URLs in there. And it's all very simple. It's spelled T-O-R, so I don't think we'll need the tiny URL that. Tor is really cool, in, you know, my humble opinion. Essentially what it boils down to is that your internet traffic is bounced, you know, through two or three machines through encrypted tunnels and then out to the, you know, giant global interweb. The plus for you is that it masks who's making the request, and theoretically it's untraceable back to you. You know, we don't know this for sure because I'm not sure how many people have done, you know, major, you know, investigations on the protocol. I think it's going to be similar to Freenet, as in it's going to be susceptible to some attacks, but you really need to get down to the nitty-gritty to do it. Anyway, the plus for it is that it masks who's making the request, and, you know, it's untraceable back to you. And I personally use it regularly. For nothing else, it's fun to see where your connections get routed to and from. For example, when I do certain searches on Google when using Tor, it comes back in, you know, French or Spanish or Russian, or it's all kinds of interesting, weird languages as it thinks you're coming from these IP addresses. And as for Dogtanian's conspiracy theories, you know, DARPA's had its hand in a lot of things. It's essentially a scientific think tank, too. You know, the military benefits from it, but they just, you know, gives it tons of money and say, here, think of some cool things, which is a very interesting job to have, in my opinion. And, you know, for those of you who don't know Internet history, the original Internet, called ARPANET, was actually founded by DARPA. DARPA's predecessor, ARPA.
ARPA, yeah, the Advanced Research Project Agency.
Ah, yes, there we go. I knew it had some type of weird acronym. Couldn't remember what the heck it was. So, no, I really don't think this is a giant evil conspiracy by the New World Order. It's interesting to see that DARPA actually helped fund a development. I wasn't actually aware of that. I never actually checked to see who actually funds it. I think it's more of, you know, DARPA shows up every week and toss the EFF a check and say, you know, keep doing this. You know, have some grant money. Here you go. It's interesting, but I don't believe I'm being tracked. At least I hope not. Anyway,
yeah,
I don't do it for anything
somehow,
too evil.
Somehow I seriously doubt that anything the EFF's involved in would be spyware masquerading as freedom.
I really don't think he's saying that's spyware. I think it's more of,
well,
you know.
Yeah, yeah, but there's connotations of spyware and Big Brother and everything in the email, and I somehow doubt that the EFF would willingly promote something that they knew had any of that stuff in it.
Well, you know, and if, you know, Dogtanian is actually interested in doing this, I say, you know, set up a proxy, run it as a, you know, part of the network, and just, you know, look at everything coming in and out of it and see if there's any interesting, you know, traffic coming out of it that could be, you know, used for something like that. Because it's distributed enough that, you know, I don't think if a certain person would just want to compromise everything, it'd be rather difficult. Like, you know, you can go off and look at all your routes change on certain programs that interface with the manager, and you can say, okay, I'm routing your connection this way now. And about 5 minutes later, it says, okay, I'm changing. I'm going to route your connection this way now. And each of the major nodes have names. Like, you know, a lot of the times I just come popping out through MIT. I've seen, what's it, MIT, and just like, you know, random people's cable modems. It's kind of scary. It's interesting. I actually haven't set up a connection, an outbound port yet, but I'm debating it, you know, security reasons aside. And, you know, interesting part about this is Tor has annoyed me because apparently on the IRC channel, someone's, you know, decided to harass us, and one of the things they used is Tor hosts. So essentially I had to ban a lot of Tor hosts from our IRC channel, which was kind of sad, but I'm not going to say it out loud, but now they're unbanned. Look at it that way. All right, Strom, how about you read the next two emails?
All right, sounds good to me. This one's also from a real name, and this one actually seems to be related to the one we just read. Have you ever thought that maybe Tor could have a backdoor in their binary versions but not have this backdoor in the source? Most people will download a binary if they have one available, and so it would make perfect sense.
That's actually a very good point, but it's possible for them to have a backdoor in the binary, but, you know, technically anything that people use for the binary, you know, there's always a possibility they have a backdoor there. My paranoid self is always thinking there's a backdoor in my binaries, which is why I try to compile most of my stuff from the source. But, you know, you always assume that the other person's trustworthy, and let's hope they are. And really, binaries aren't the only way to get a backdoor in. One of my favorite stories in, you know, hackerdom is 1984. We had a story in the ACM, Association for Computing Machinery. They're a academic group that deal with computers and compilers, and it's a very interesting journal to read up if you're getting into the nitty-gritty of computer design. Anyway, back in 1984, Ken Thompson, who was a very talented C programmer in the academic field. He collaborated with Dennis Ritchie, and for those of you who don't know who Dennis Ritchie is, him and another guy named
wasn't it Ken Thompson?
No, it was Kernighan or Ritchie.
Yeah,
Kernighan.
Ritchie sounds familiar as far as the Unix author. Let me look it up.
Yes. Well, anyway, you know, Dennis Ritchie, and you know, he essentially wrote the first major book on C. I think it's called The C Language. I've had one chance to read it, and it's absolutely fantabulous. But essentially, him and Ken Thompson wrote down and made an interesting set of patches, and it was proved to be quite a security problem. What they did was they patched the C compiler for a certain Unix system. I believe it was BSD. And they patched it. And so what this patch did is it essentially looked out to if you were recompiling the login program. And with the login program, for those of you who aren't familiar with Linux, is it essentially governs who can get in and get out of the system. You know, for Windows, you know, you press Control-Alt-Delete. For Unix systems, you get to a login prompt. So basically what it is, it was looking for you to log into the system. And, you know, I'm sorry, it looked for you to recompile the login program, and it essentially inserted a bug. So you could either log in with your password, or you could log in as anybody with a certain password that it would look for, and it would let you in as that person. Oops. Now, you know, the really interesting part of this is, you know, how would one fix this? You would basically, you know, precompile a C program, the C compiler. And with the C compiler, when the patch also looked for whether or not you were compiling the C compiler, and if it saw you were compiling the C compiler, it also inserted the bug into the C compiler that patched the login program. So, you know, essentially you were stuck between a rock and a hard place. You had to find a binary compatible version of your C compiler, which back in 1984 really wasn't easy to do. I mean, you know, you had the internet and the ARPANET, but there was no, like, you know, kernel.org or GNU, you know, GNU was around then, wasn't they? Anyway, there was no GCC to actually just fresh out and download. And even if you did pull down the source code, how are you going to compile it? It was a very interesting problem. And allegedly it never got out, or they said they never got out, but they never let the actual patch get out. But apparently someone, you know, back in 1986, someone saw someone logged into the system from, you know, logged in as KT, which was Ken Thompson's login name.
Yeah, it was Ken Thompson and Dennis Ritchie that started work on Unix.
Yeah, but I thought it was Kernighan and Ritchie. It was always K and R.
No.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. There we go. Everyone's assignment for email. You know, let me know if I'm wrong. And, you know, yeah, I'm sure everyone's going to jump at that chance. Oh, my God, he's a noob. He took over for Stank Dog. That guy sucks.
We'll have a whole You Suck special next week.
Yes, there we go. Well, how Black Ratchet and Strom Carlson sucks. Actually, you know, and technically this whole problem, it still exists today. I mean, I know like a year ago someone compromised, I think it was OpenSSH, and they essentially compromised the source tree and put a backdoor in, and they had about 1,000 downloads that night from just people randomly pulling down OpenSSH, and they were essentially running a program that had a backdoor in it. Because, you know, how many you download something from the source. I mean, do you inspect every line of code? I'm not going to admit it, but technically I don't either. But
yeah, I don't think
compromising SourceForge.
I don't think I would want to spend the time looking at every single line of asterisk or mplayer.
Yeah. Oh, God, mplayer. Yeah. Heck, every line in the Linux kernel, there's something scary.
There's a fun month-long reading project.
Yeah, month-long. God, I wonder actually how long that would take.
Assuming you're
actually
a speed reader,
every
right?
line of the Linux kernel.
Well, assuming you're a speed reader and you've got good comprehension.
Well, you have to be a speed reader that could read the Unix code. C code.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like plain text.
Well, no, of course.
But essentially, the moral of the story is. You can't completely trust code that you have not written yourself and compiled it yourself, when you know that, you know, you have to compile your C compiler by hand and you have to make sure that your code's okay. It's always possible that something can go be wrong.
And if you have multiple personality disorder, how can you even trust your own code? Because are you sure you wrote it?
Oh, boy, we're ticking off everyone. We're ticking off, you know, people who understand Kernighan and Ritchie. We're ticking off people who have bipolar disorder. It's a full-fledged, you know, in-rev radio and nothing.
Part of video. We don't fail to offend anyone.
Yes. PC, who needs that stuff?
Yeah.
Anyway, basically, I'm going to toss a link out here that I found. It's acm.org/classics/SEP95, as in September 95, and that's the it's a reprint of the original article, and it's relatively basic. I mean, anyone who can understand how a compiler works and how, you know, programming languages work, should be able to understand it fine. Anything further, or would you like to move on to the next email?
Let's move on to the next email. This is from Neo Enke, I think that's how you pronounce it. N-E-O-E-N-K-E. Yo, Captain Stank. You want to be Captain Stank this time?
Arr!
Okay, Captain Stank. Yo, Captain Stank. I just finished listening to all 103 current episodes in order, although there are a few episodes that I did listen to more than once. After 3 months of solid binrev, I figured I'd drop some thoughts. First of all, I'm completely blown away by the amount of time you must devote to binrev and other related projects. I have major respect for you and all those other individuals who are constantly building the community and putting stuff out there. I also had a request for a show topic. I'm sure you get these all the time. What's your opinion on pwning people? Or owning people? I'm not sure whether you want to transpose the P to an O, but what's your opinion on owning people?
Oh, pwning is good.
What's your opinion on pwning people? I don't consider myself a criminal, and I'm completely against using technical knowledge for criminal purposes. What about playing practical jokes, though? For example, charging a 1-900-PORN number to business A's credit card and spoofing the car phone number of a major competitor's company car. Or doing a public service such as changing wallpapers to advise about reconfiguring wireless routers, which are open or on default, with a porn background, of course. I guess porn is not an absolute requirement. What about taking down phishing sites? Everyone messes with someone else once in a while, your pwned video, for example. But where do you do another draw the line? How do you define hacker ethics? Neo Enke.
Hacker ethics. Boy, this is going to be a minefield.
I
think that's, you know, a really good idea. I think I'm going to toss that onto the list of topics we've, you know, well, technically I've sort of just made a list. I don't think you've ever seen it. Haha. I'm keeping it in a safe underneath my bed. Anyway, I think that's an interesting topic, and that just sort of popped into the email bin, and, you know, essentially, you know, we're flying by the seat of our pants here. I got the email password from Stank last night. And I basically, you know, goofed off during my break at work and wrote the show notes. We'll have to go into further detail, like, you know, what all this ethics stuff is. But what a hack is like, you know, if we go, we open up our copy of the New Hacker's Dictionary, they essentially, something, a hack is something that's simple, elegant, and doesn't hurt anyone, physically or otherwise. You know, hacker ethics is, you know, giant, hazy, gray area that no one really wants to venture into. Yeah, my view on the whole thing is the golden rule of do unto others is, you know, you would have do unto you. Whenever I'm thinking about something, I always ask myself, you know, if the situation was reversed, would I be okay with someone doing that to me? For me, 99% of the time was, you know, for the gray stuff, I say no. I wouldn't want someone to do that to me. It's like, you know, giant resounding no. You know, if you find an open AP, reconfiguring it to use, you know, wires encryption protocol or locking it down some, it may be okay. But as for mucking about with, like, any of the computers, it's just silly. Like, I think trespassing on another person's computer should really carry the same, like, social stigma of breaking into someone's house. I mean, there's really no excuse to actually trudge in. And I'm going to get tons of flame mail from that one.
Yeah, and not to mention that, you know, there's a hell of a difference between a practical joke and then charging porn numbers to some business's credit card.
Indeed.
Yeah, a practical joke would be, you know, having their fax machine generate, you know, a hi there at 2 a.m. every day or something like that. You know,
or a practical joke would be switching someone's room and then not telling them about it and then, you know, dragging them out onto and dragging them down to the new room and them not knowing it and then videotaping it.
Yeah, you know, like, something silly, something mostly harmless.
No, it's but, not mostly harmless. It just should really be harmless. Something that's,
yeah,
you know, silly and haha, and you can all joke about it later. I mean,
yeah, charging a porn number doesn't really fall under that category.
I mean, you know, it's basically doing that is just more of messing someone out. You know, you're causing some grunt. I mean, it may be Microsoft versus, you know, Apple, but at some point you're causing someone some headaches. You know, some bean counter up in Microsoft's 350th floor, who has to go out and sort this mess with a credit card company, sit on hold for a half hour, and then, you know, say, we really didn't do this. It's, I don't know. It's, like I said, it's a minefield at best.
It's, yeah, it's juvenile at best, to be honest.
I can understand how, like, you know, we were all 13 once. I'm not saying, you know, Neo NK, I'm not trying to insult you in any way, shape, or form. I mean, It is humorous, and I know that I've done stuff where I look back now and said, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. I went to Boy Scout camp. I did the whole shaving cream and the people's bunk beds and, you know, wedgies and the whole lot. But anyway, let's go delve in the Black Ratchet psyche here. Everyone does it. It's understandable. But at the same time, you know, when you look back at it now, you go say, ugh.
All right, here's another email from Gelada, I think.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Gelato.
I like it. Gelato. No, I think it's Gelato.
Yeah, yeah, Gelato.
Again, I will reinstate thanks shout for people. If you want to have your names pronounced right, go give it a pronunciation key. We do suck at this. I'm horrible at it. I'm just absolutely horrid.
However, on the plus side, now I really, really want Gelato.
Gelato.
Gelato slash Gelato writes, a while ago, actually, episode 78, you mentioned a VoIP plus Zorus equals 337, and you talked about the feature of his PDA being a VoIP phone inside your house and then becoming a mobile phone when he walks out the house. Maybe he means 1337. I just found out that BT are doing the same thing. It's called BT Fusion, and more information can be obtained at http://www.btfusion.bt.com. Thought you might like to know, means you and a lot of the GDP are VoIP and Asterisk fans. Cheers, Gelada.
And for those of you who don't know, BT stands for British Telecom, I believe.
Yeah, the
in
British
this context.
Telecom company. It looks really cool. It's what it is basically is it seems that it's, you know, BT offers you a mobile phone that when you get home, you somehow tell it that you're home, and then you get charged residential rates for using it. And
I believe it's all done through a VoIP setup, if I'm not mistaken. I think I read that on there.
I haven't actually looked through it completely yet.
Shame on you.
Yes, shame on me. But it seems interesting just from the fact that here in the U.S., I've seen companies sell I think it was Singular that was doing it. They sold an adapter where you would plug your mobile phone in when you got home, and it would allow you to use your home phones through the mobile phone. So you could take advantage of the mobile phone unlimited nights and weekends, but use your actual regular telephone set instead of your landline service. And it seems like a cool idea. I don't know whether British Telecom is doing anything, whether they're actually routing everything through the cell phone or whether it's VoIP, as you say, but my guess is that they're probably using some sort of compression codec. And compare it to Mu-Law or A-Law, which A-Laws would be what you use in Britain. But compared to Mu-Law or A-Law, compression codecs just don't do it for me. And I'd rather pay the extra money for a higher quality connection.
Well, you, me, and about three other people would probably want that. But I think most people in I'm pretty sure most people in Britain and most people in the United States would be more interested in saving money than, you know, oh, it's Eulaw. Oh, it's GSM. I don't know what the heck those are. And it's interesting that I actually kind of fished this way out in the back of the mailbag there. I got to reach down way to the bottom. And I pulled this one out because I was been recently fooling around with my pocket PC and a little VoIP over IP program called X-Lite. I believe it's called X-Lite. And they try to charge you for it, but you can still find it free because they used to have a it's kind of like very freeware, shareware type programs. And they used to have one that was easily distributable, but they stopped doing that. But you can still find it on certain sites that haven't updated. It's starting to become harder and harder to find, but it's still out there. Anyway, I use it with my pocket PC, and I also picked up a simple Belkin Bluetooth headset. And it only works sporadically. I really blame X-Lite on this, or just like, you know, my Astra setup in general. And how the setup works actually is, let's go explain that first, is I have it on my pocket PC and it registers to my Astra server, and I essentially have an Astra extension on my pocket PC. And for some reason it just doesn't work sometimes, and I have to reset it and, you know, make sure the phase of the moon is right to get it to work, and it's sporadic. I think it's X-Lite's problem, like I said. But when it does work, it is just so cool. I am thoroughly amazed that I can go to like any access point, hook into it, and I will instantly have an Astra's connection on my, you know, Astra's connection on my pocket PC. And I think Bluetooth is the best thing since sliced bread. This is the first time I've really actually played with it, besides like doing some really simple file transfers at work with a couple of pocket PCs from there that the IT staff got to fool around with. But, oh, man, it's just simply amazing when I, like, you know, I pop my little headset in and I can just carry it around with me and I can put it in my pocket and continue and there's no wires. And as you can possibly tell, I'm a bit of a technology nut. I just get really, like, thoroughly thrilled when I start playing with this stuff. And it's just really cool. It is really, really cool.
Of course, the alternative to that is to, you know, take the laptop, have Asterisk on the laptop, and then have some sort of, you know, terminal adapter that you carry with. And so you go to Starbucks or wherever, and you set up the laptop, and you plug in the terminal adapter, then you take your Western Electric 500 set out, and you plop it on the table, and you talk on that.
Yeah, you could do that, I guess. I know there was kicking around the forums. There was a bunch of guys who decided to take they weren't Western Electric 500 sets. They were another type of make and model. But for most of you, we really wouldn't care about that. And they put a GSM phone inside of it, and they're actually starting to sell it right now. They're actually, you know, pre-made. It works fine. Just pop your SIM chip in. And beside it using GSM, and Strom would never use it, I just think it's the coolest thing ever.
Well, it's pretty damn cool, the fact that it's got a, you know, just a 500 set sitting there with no wires coming out of it that's usable. But
yeah,
if I were
like
doing it,
I just want, like, to take it out to a public and, like, you know, have it start ringing.
Yeah, that would be awesome. But what I think would be cooler is to put a little Wi-Fi adapter and some sort of SIP adapter in there, and wire the ATA into the phone itself. And so you've got, you know, a VoIP phone that you carry around, and you just use Wi-Fi. So you take it to Starbucks.
Well, I actually wanted to do something similar to that. I wanted to actually an ATA stands for those who don't know, is an analog terminal adapter. And essentially what it allows you to do is it allows you to plug a quote-unquote regular phone in, and it also on the other side you plug an Ethernet connection in, and at which point your regular phone becomes a special VoIP phone. I always wanted to, like, wire it directly in and just put an Ethernet jack on the back so I can have, like, you know, just plug myself into it directly to Ethernet and have, like, this old Western Electric 2500 set, which is the touch-tone model for those of you playing at home. I actually, Western Electric is the people who made the phone, and I really wanted to change the logo so it said Western Digital. Because, you know, it's a brand new era, and, you know, copyright violations aside, it would be a fun thing to have. Yeah, so this is what happens when, you know, computer hackers and freaks get together and start dreaming of these things. It's a dangerous combination.
We come up with things that scare mere mortals.
Yeah. And getting back to how you were talking about whipping out the laptop and plugging the Western Electric 500 set in, we'll ignore that fact. But, like, you know, for people who have Asterisk and a lot of other programs, I know Vonage has a soft phone client that they sell. And what that is you just have to rip out the laptop. And if you have an Internet access, you can start accessing your phone. I mean, you'd have to plug in a headset to it, but it works fine. I've played with that before, but I got to admit, the Bluetooth headset in the pocket PC is just infinitely cooler in my book.
What I can do,
it's just so tiny.
What I do when I travel is I take my Cisco IP phone with me. I just plug it in wherever I am.
Cisco IP phone.
Well, yeah, I know, but you can take, you know, your terminal adapter and your telephone set as well.
I've actually run into a couple of people that do that. Like, they plug themselves into a hotel, and they're completely accessible by their, you know, whatever their VoIP provider is, whether it be Vonage or Packet8 or some other voice over IP provider. And, you know, you can just call their quote-unquote home number and reach them in their hotel. Voice over IP is very interesting, to say the least.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. Anyway, next email.
All right. This comes from some guy named Ragweed. I'm writing in response to the whole cert/OHD/masters crap and the filtering of web content in schools. I've had the chance to do work with my school and learn a few things. First off, the public sector can be riddled with idiots. Second, in New York State, at least schools are required to filter websites. However, there is no documentation as to what the schools must filter. This makes the job of a sysadmin much more difficult. Most of the time, the sysadmins leave the web filters on the default filters. They do often add new blocks to the software occasionally. As far as email services go, I have been told that many of these have been blocked for security reasons. These reasons being along the lines of, if the attacker does not know you exist, they can't attack you. Also, in these days of Windows insecurities and stupid users, one can only imagine why email services are blocked. One more thing, I would like to say that I'm 16 years old. Ragweed.
Well, Ragway, let me just put this out right here. You're 16, so I'm just going to get it out to you right now. I hate to break it to you, but the world is filled with idiots, you know, public and private. It don't matter. I like to say that, you know, I've met some very clueful people in the public sector, and I've also met some absolute morons, but at the same time, on the private sector, I've met some very clueful people, and I've met my fair share of morons.
Yes, it's not just the interweb that's full of morons.
But the interweb does have its fair share.
Oh, yes.
I'm sure everyone can name a few that they know personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, yeah, unfortunately, you know, technology is kind of a bit of a dividing line. You know, there are people who get it, there are people who don't. And it's just like anything else.
I'd say that's about a lot of things.
Yeah, it's, you know, same as anything else. Like, you know, me and cars. I don't know that much about cars. I can tell you about telephones all day up and down, but when it comes to a car, you know, I am not really much of an auto person. So, you know,
that's what it is. I mean, it's all kinds of technological things. You have the people who know and the people who don't, and then there's people who kind of muddle by. I mean, I guess I'm somewhere between Strom and, you know, an expert. I mean, I can change my oil. I can do some very basic diagnoses, but, you know, at the same point, you know, my friend who knows everything about cars can essentially rip out an engine block in a week and, you know, completely redo it up and drop a new one in. He's just absolutely amazing. But at the course time, I think I'm fairly more well-versed in computers than him. Sorry, Steve.
Yeah. I can't rip out an engine block, but I can compile a kernel like nobody's business.
There you go. Oh, he's talking about how schools filter internet. You know, schools will filter internet, you know. I'm not going to say how, but I like to point out that I single-handedly hastened my school's filtering policy by, you know, I kind of drove the issue home a little bit. I'm not going to say how, why, when, or where, but, you know, let's just say I did it, and I refer to the clause that came up. You know, I graduated, then my sister started school the year afterwards, and they made you sign a little internet filtering clause immediately afterwards, and I like to refer to that as a black ratchet clause. And, you know, you say it like, you know, takes away from the sysadmin, and it does. I mean, the whole problem with filtering is that it's, you know, whitelisting versus blacklisting. You know, blacklisting is very, you know, hard because, you know, what website is going to pop up next week, you know, having all kinds of evil cat sex porn? You know, whitelisting is easier, but it blocks out like a lot of important sites. Like, you know, I'm not going to mention any names. Binrev. And, you know, he says that, you know, people filter email and everything. I technically, out of all the filtering, I guess I can understand that the most. I mean, you know, my workplace, they try to block a lot of the web mail and everything because, you know, we're not sure what kind of stuff's going to come through. I mean, you know, we have a certain set of policies, like, you know, we will not allow, like, you know, screensavers through the email system because, you know, 90% of screensavers can be used as viruses. And, you know, what happens if someone goes to their Hotmail account, downloads the screensaver that they got from, you know, cousin Jim Bob, and, you know, runs it on their computer? Yes, technically the antivirus might catch it, but why take that chance?
And also a lot of filtering is done not so much for security reasons, but for political reasons, too.
Well, political reasons, yes. And, you know, what it boils down to is, you know, I'm not saying I'm not condoning blocking the Internet. Please, you know, don't – I'm sure everyone's firing up their hate mail makers right now. But what it boils down to is, you know, your parents, your friends' parents, and, you know, anyone else who goes to that school, you know, what happens when little Johnny, you know, accidentally sees some type of, you know, naughty image on the Internet through the school system? The parents are going to be up in arms. And, you know, when they start bringing this up to the school are essentially doing this as a, you know, CIA maneuver. You know, it's a big – the Internet for a lot of people is a very big, very scary place, and it's up to people like, you know, hackers like ourselves to explain why it's, you know, it's silly, it's nothing to be afraid of, you know. Yes, there's some mean sites out there, but, you know, not everyone's going to be sneaking around the corridor trying to lure you into a virtual van with trying to see their puppy.
Is that the last email? That is the last email, yeah.
Yes.
And we have some personal hacking stories now. We're just going to go into the next topic. I'll start it off. So, like, you know, for me, it was, you know, essentially this whole weekend I've been doing stuff. I went to something called the MIT Flea. And the MIT Flea, for everyone who isn't around Boston, it's a flea market for geeks. Every possible, you know, piece of equipment you could possibly want is right there for sale at your fingertips. It's a religious experience. It really is. And, you know, I hooked up with the Boston 2600 folks, and we set up our own table, and we had quite a display going there, and I was essentially selling my stuff to make spending money for DEF CON so I can eat there, because, you know, eating is good. Don't you agree?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Eating is wonderful.
Eating is wonderful, yes. You were just having waffles before the show.
Oh, yes. Nice toasted waffles. Here's a tip, by the way, for all of you waffle connoisseurs out there. If you take the waffle and you put a layer of whipped cream and then drizzle the maple syrup on top of it, it doesn't get soggy so quickly.
On the next episode of Cooking with Strom. Bin Rev cooking tips. There we go.
See? With the new coast, you get more than you bargained for.
Also, you know, work's really been kicking my butt lately. I've been developing a new program for everyone to use at my place of employment, and everyone seems to like it, but, you know, no one decided to beta test before we actually shoved it in production. I told them all to do it, but no one did. So now all those embarrassing bugs is actually starting to pop up. So I've been pulling some interesting hours at the office lately. And what little free time I do have, I've been working on Strom and I's DEF CON presentation. And, oh, boy, that's interesting.
Yeah,
we're hopefully going to pull that off. Okay.
Yeah, I've still got to make all the recordings for the DEF CON by phone system, which will be introduced.
Are we announcing the DEF CON by phone system?
Yeah, we might as well announce
it
now. Yeah. I mean,
oh, okay.
Yeah, it'll be in the official program anyway, so might as well.
All right, we'll let you announce that.
Yeah. What we're doing is we're putting together an automatic interactive telephone schedule of the convention. So you'll get your paper schedule when you go to DEF CON, but of course, you know how that goes. You lose it, or you misplace it, or you accidentally fall into the pool with your schedule and it just gets ruined, or you don't want to use it because you don't want to ruin it, or anyway. You have any number of reasons for not using a paper schedule. So what DEF CON by phone is, you call it up from your cell phone and you create an account, and you can find out what shows are coming up the next hour, or you can tell it what you're interested in seeing, and then it'll call you ahead of time and tell you, hey, guess what? The show you're interested in seeing is about to start. Or the show you were going to see.
Which I think is the best feature myself.
Oh, yeah. That way you can go off and play poker and still
or blackjack.
Know, yeah, or blackjack, and still make it back in time for the show. Because, you know, those casinos, there's no clocks, there's no windows, there's no sense of passage of time at all. So you go in at 2 p.m.
It's kind of eerie. For those of you who have never been in a casino, it's a very interesting place. It's like Disneyland for adults. It really is. And you really have no concept on about the outside world. Mm-hmm. It's creepy. It really is. I strongly remember, like, you know, going the first time into casino, which was, you know, Foxwood Sound in Connecticut. We'll send them a plug. And I walked in. It was light out. And then I walked out, and it was dark. And it just completely blew my mind, because I only thought I was there for about, 2 hours tops. I fully expected it to still be light out. Wow. It was weird. It's a very interesting thing, which is, you know, why DEF CON by phone is so handy. As long as the cell phone works in the casino.
Yeah, and they tend to do that. Although,
oh, okay.
Although the pit bosses will get kind of angry at you if you sit at the blackjack table on your cell phone the whole time. So.
No, really?
Nah, yeah, you wouldn't believe it, but that's really what happens.
What happens if I whip out my laptop there?
They'll get pretty pissed off, I think.
Yeah, I think I'll lose my laptop. So anyway, what else have you been doing, Strom?
Well, I've just had a friend move in with me, so we've been rearranging the apartment, and I've installed a new toy on the living room wall, and I'll demonstrate that for you now. Hold on just a second.
Oh, goodness, you're going to really demonstrate that on air. Yes, we're phone freaks here.
5 cents. 10 cents. 25 cents.
Yeah, I've installed a couple of payphones on the wall here. We put a desk in the kitchen nook, because I never used the kitchen nook, and just been generally reconfiguring the apartment to be more hacktacular than any other apartment in Los Angeles.
Hacktacular.
Hacktacular.
It's hacktastic.
And then, of course, I've had to deal with my desktop just blowing up in my face.
Was it the motherboard or was it the hard drive? And does the old hard drive still work?
Oh, I haven't even gotten to testing everything yet. But basically what was happening was I was having major hard drive problems. I couldn't boot up. You know, it wouldn't recognize a hard drive. The hard drive just, would just fall right off the system. So I said, oh, okay, it must be a hard drive problem. And maybe it's a power supply problem because, you know, the hard drive, I've had several hard drives fail in this thing before. And it certainly seemed reasonable that the hard drive might be killed by a faulty power supply. So replace the power supply, replace the hard drive, and things seemed to go well for about a day, and then shit started happening again. I said, and then stuff started happening again, and I said, oh, crap, it must be the motherboard.
Ugh.
So on the negative side, I just had to buy a new motherboard. On the positive side, I now have a much faster system, and it seems to work just fine. So hopefully the other...
How fast is it?
It's a 2.8 gigahertz P3, a 2.8 gigahertz P4, actually. Yes.
I don't think they made P3s that high.
Yeah, so we'll see. This is my first P4 system, so I'm still so used to saying P3.
What were you running before?
Before, it was an AMD Athlon XP 2000 Plus.
Ah. Actually, you know, just to show how pathetic I am, I'm still running on what I think it's a P3 700. It may be a P3 733, but that's still my main desktop, and I'm really scared about upgrading, mainly because I really just the sheer idea of moving all my files just really scares me because it's just a massive amount of stuff.
I've done it so many times.
No kidding. I have 80 gigs of data on here, just of random files, all shoved in random places. It's going to be like monumental when I actually move up to a new computer.
Yeah, that I've done it so many times. It's not even a bother anymore. That's why I just shove all my random data into one place because I know it's going to happen again.
See, it always starts that way. But like, I got this computer in 2000, and it's just sort of, you know, that started that way, and then it just sort of got overgrown, and I've never actually had a chance to clean it up. It's actually, I think a good majority of it is on one section of my hard drive. I just need to, once I figure and sit it down and actually get everything figured out, I can probably move it okay. Black Ratchet's data moving tips. Yeah, you were saying something, and I completely forget what it was, and I was going to interject something, but oh well.
You were going to interject cat sex, weren't you?
Oh, yes, indeed. for those of you who, you know, now we're just, God, do you realize we're going to, like, spread, like, cat sex to, like, you know, another, like, 3,000 people or something?
That's the idea.
That's kind of scary. I'm sure we're getting bleeped off the air in that radio station. But anyway, anything else you've been doing? Or is that about it?
That's about it. I quit my job, and I've just been relaxing and catching up on sleep.
Wow, how yin and yang here. I've been going balls to the wall here, and you're sleeping.
Yeah, well...
You suck.
I do, in so many more ways than one, but we'll not get into that here.
All right, well, since we're kind of done with the show and tell, I guess we'll move into the specific show topic, which is... Really, we don't have a specific topic for this episode. As you can tell, it's just kind of witty banter back and forth. This is really just a getting-to-know-us episode, because, you know... We really didn't have a topic picked out. I dropped the ball on this one. Essentially, you know, Stang told me last week, you know, oh, you know, it's the 104 episode. You guys are taking it over next week. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I essentially got the keys to the kingdom last night around 1 a.m. And like I said, I hardly wrote notes down, you know, this morning with the emails. And right now I just think we're going to say, you know, getting to know you. And, you know, nothing's particular, you know. Boring stuff.
Boring stuff.
I'm sure you're all scratching your heads right now, trying to figure out what the heck I'm talking about. So let me just, like, go in and tell me who I am, for those of you who don't know. I think everyone who pretty much hangs out on the BinRev forums, and if you don't do that, you should really do that.
Yeah, binrev.com/forums.
Yes, thank you for saying that, because I was just
love it. Register. Don't be an asshat.
Yes. Don't try to... It's a very nice community. It really is. I came there a year ago, and I never actually hung out on a forum for more than a couple of consecutive weeks. And here, like, for those of you listening last week, you know, I started there around late June, and I'm still there today. So I guess it is kind of a friendly forum.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. A little about me. I'm from Boston. I've been active on the BinRev forums for about a year. I've been in computers, but, like, since about 1992. and really on the internet since 1995. And there was the internet back then, just so you know. we used to call it the interweb. Actually, no, there was no web back there. I can actually distinctly remember back in 1995, right when Netscape started to take off, and I remember thinking, World Wide Web, God, that'll never catch on. Gopher is so much more easier.
I remember being excited about the possibility of getting my first Telnet client back then.
That's what I used. I used Telnet and I used Gopher, and I was huge into the mud scene for like a year, and then I realized that like my parents got really pissed off when I started using. My first account allowed 10 hours a month on the system, and you know when I started pushing 30, it was only like a dollar for each additional hour. It was a wonderful ISP. I really missed that place. They eventually sold themselves, but you know what am I going to do? Well, I'm kind of dating myself here. There we go. I'm not as old as Stank. But I'm Stank's not old. Stank's very young. He's young at heart. There we go.
Old fart.
I'm an old fart compared to most whippersnappers out there. Oh, let's see. I enjoy computer and phones. I really enjoy you know computer and phones equally. I'm huge into Asterisk, and that's what I'm presenting. And that's what Strom and I are presenting on at DEF CON, for those of you curious.
Come see our talk.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next week anyway. I've really been, Asterisk is my big thing. I've been really mucking about in it lately. And my pet project right now, I guess you could still say, is yet another payphone list, which is available at yapl.org. I can always manage to plug that on BinRev Radio at least once. How about you, Strom?
Well, let me see. I'm Strom Carlson. I've been active with phones and computers for... God, something like 13 years now. And, I live in Los Angeles, which is why instead of hearing, one host coming in with wonderful, wonderful audio quality and the other on the telephone, you hear both of us on the phone because we're on opposite coasts, and it just makes sense to do it this way for the show.
Yeah, and we're phone freaks.
Yeah, we're phone freaks, both of us. We're presenting on Asterisk at DEF CON. Asterisk, for those of you who don't know what it is this open-source PBX that you run on a Linux box. I'm running it on like a 1 gigahertz P3 under my desk. That's what we're recording this on.
The PBX is faster than my desktop. That's kind of pathetic.
I don't know what's more pathetic, that or the fact that this system was free.
That's kind of pathetic, too.
But I collect telephones as a hobby. I've got all sorts of weird and crazy things. I've got a, here on my... on my shelf above my desk, a little toy Pac-Bell van sitting there. Looking cool.
I'm sure you are.
The Pac-Bell van.
Strom and I have never, ever seen each other.
Yeah, we're going to meet for the very first time. Well, no, you've seen me.
Yeah, true.
You were at the DEF CON talk last year, and you never came up and said hi.
Well, because I was in awe of your celebritydom.
And that's a weird thing, I'm not really much of a person for fame or celebrity or anything. To be honest, I rarely, if ever, listen to internet radio shows or watch, internet TV shows. I don't know why, it just really, if people want to be Strom Carlson fanboys out there, that's fine with me, but I just find the whole thing.
I was president of the Boston chapter of the Strom Carlson fan club.
There's a Strom Carlson fan club?
Well, I don't know, but I guess I started one.
Sweet.
Yes, I was the one who was discussing flinging panties on the stage with you and Lucky.
Flinging panties on the stage.
Anyway, I'm sure, our listener to them has, gone down to, nothing by now.
Yes, they're all...
I'm sure there's, one person listening on this... One person on the stream, and he's asleep.
Yeah, no one wants to listen anymore.
No.
Welcome to the very last ever edition of BinRev Radio, killed personally by Strom Carlson and Black Ratchet.
Yes. Actually, the interesting part is that default radio canceled one episode after I actually, called in and talked to it.
I think I was on one episode of default radio, and that was the only amateur internet radio show I've ever been on besides this one.
This is amateur. This is very professional here.
Okay,
we're uber professional.
Uber professional, yes. Recording from...
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing I wanted to say. That's what I wanted to interject. Apparently, the first time I appeared on BinRev Radio, Stank's motherboard decided to die like the day before. So there's a little bit of resonance here, I think. It's kind of eerie.
So it's all your fault, isn't it?
Yes, it's all my fault. Everything's my fault.
Yes, yes.
That's what my fiancé tells me all the time.
Ah.
So anyway, now that we've, you know, completely lost all of our listenerdom, let's go on to what we're going to do with the show. We're charting a new course. Strom and I are both phone freaks. And, you know, Stank fully admitted he was never really a phone freak, but, like, you know, he understood it. I don't think he gave himself enough credit. And I find there's a vast plethora of information that has never been touched upon by BinRev Radio, whether it be, you know, phones and, you know, silly things you can do with the phone. I was going to say that was the first, like, you know, ACTS tone ever on the BinRev Radio when you did the payphone thing, but I think last week we kind of... They kind of did that for the in-between episodes, in-between segments. That was a...
We're
also... Yeah,
well,
so,
this is definitely the first time anyone has called in from a real ACTS phone and done it on the air.
I don't know. Well, yes, okay. First time you ever did ACTS tones on the air. Now, I think Matt has called in from a payphone once. That was a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
Anyway, we're drifting again. Oh, anyway, what we're going to try to do is we're going to make the show a little more interactive, and I think what we're going to possibly try and do, and fail miserably in the process with my luck, is we're going to try to do live episodes, not every week, but now and then, and we're definitely going to try to set up some kind of call-in line, whether it be, like, you know, live, or, you know, heck, just, you know, leave us a message and we'll play you on the air. That's the least we can probably do.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're trying to try to make people, you know, just interact with the show a little more, you know, the host and the topics. And I think we're going to try and announce topics ahead of time so that people can actually prepare their questions. And if we do a live show, you know, we're going to announce the topic ahead of time. We're going to make announcements on the forums, probably do it the week, chat on the show the week before. So, you know, when we get our guests on, because there will be guests and hopefully some cool people, you know, people can call up and interact and probably, you know, dumbstruck us with their questions. Another thing we're going to try to get from is, you know, Stank was very static about his, you know, co-host setup, and it works, and I mean, heck, we're doing it this week.
Yeah.
And another thing we want to try is we're going to try to, you know, expand upon it anymore. Maybe get like 3 or 4 people on here, you know, talking about a topic, because, you know, you have an opinion, I have an opinion, but what happens, you know, when a third person gets on there, or a fourth, or we'll go out there and maybe do a fifth. Oof. Living life on the edge.
We should have 2 million on at the same time. That way...
Oh, God, do you realize... Can Asterisk even handle that?
Well, if you network them together enough, you know, you got like a whole bunch of boxes that each handle 1,000, then you just bridge them together at certain key points, and...
True. See, that's why I default to you on Asterisk, because you just have so much. Yeah. I don't think we're going to do the 2 million thing, because, like, you know, that could be... I don't think anyone's going to be able to understand there. That's the trade-off with, like, you know, when you start getting more people on there, is you want to make sure everyone's heard equally, and, you know, you don't want to have someone coming back to you and saying, oh, I never got to talk.
Well, each person can say one word, and that'll fill up the whole show.
I'm going to ignore that. Anyway, it'll be cool to have more than 2 viewpoints on the show. We have a lot of ideas, you know, we're going to try and out see, and we're not sure if all of these are going to happen, or, you know, if just, we gotta learn to crawl before we can walk. I mean, you know, this episode is going to be probably a flaming disaster judging from it. Anyway, we have a lot of ideas, and we want to try some new things out. We're not sure if all of these are going to happen. We're not sure if we're going to get these all done. You know, we're not even going to provide a time frame. We're not going to, you know, because, like we said, we gotta... You know, got to learn to crawl before we can walk, and, you know, we're excited. Or hopefully you're going to be too. And I hope you tune in and listen. And I sound really bad right now, just sort of rambling on.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, we have a couple of interesting topics coming up. We'll just sort of toss them out there. You know, what we want to do is we want to try to get, like, you know, introductions out for people who, you know, because a lot of new people coming in from the podcast. You know, don't really understand. They understand the techie side of things, but they don't understand, like, you know, how can we say it, the hacker way, as it were. We're going to try to get an introduction to hacking, you know, what people can learn, some good topics, you know. Basically, the entire show is going to be use Linux. We're probably just going to wrap it up after that.
Yeah.
You know, we're also going to try to get an introduction for freaking, and, you know, because a lot of people don't understand what freaking is anymore now that, you know, the 1960s are over and people can't blue box, you know. What is blue boxing? I can't flash 2600 hertz down my line anymore.
Yeah. Not to mention that most of the information you'll find floating around on the web is either outdated or completely fictitious. So it'll be good for a lot of our listeners to have a good concrete reference for modern freaking. Actually,
indeed.
An idea I wanted to float past you, Ratchet. What would you say if we, for giving our asterisk presentation on the show here, maybe in two parts or something?
Can we do that legally?
Yeah, we can do it. We can give the presentation again, yeah. DEF CON owns the
recording. Well, I know we say... The DEF CON, the interesting part about DEF CON is that you basically sign your soul away when you submit your presentation to them. And I figure we can also probably do that. I know that they've covered Asterisk before, but maybe we can do another show. I'll have to re-listen to that episode, see what they covered, and hopefully it won't, you know, mission mash too much off, and we'll cover some stuff they haven't covered. Because, you know, I think the last time they did it was... Actually, I'm not even going to venture a guess because I don't know. But a lot of new stuff has come out in Asterisk. Asterisk is still very in active development. So there's all kinds of wonderful new features you can always use every other week.
Tons thereof.
Like I said, anyway, we're excited, and we're actually probably going to have some topics next week. So we hope you're going to tune in. And we're kind of running out of material here.
Yeah. So I think we should let this end gracefully instead of having it crash.
Okay, I think that we can kind of wrap this up now because we've been babbling on incoherently for way too long, and I'm sure no one's listening by now. So this was our first episode. I'd like to send out an apology to everyone because I'm sure that this probably sounds not as well as the other BinRiff episodes.
More ghastly than you can possibly imagine is the way I would put it.
I wouldn't go that far, but sure, I guess if you want to say it. We'll just, you know, we'll do some announcements here. I think the main announcement that I wanted to get across is, you know, DEF CON, July 29th through July 31st. We're going to try to focus on this a little more next week if our plans follow through. Can you think of any other announcements you might want to get out of?
Tune in next week, kids. It won't suck so hard as it did this week.
Yeah, okay, there we go. That's a good one. Shouts. I'd like to send shouts out to Stankdog for giving us this opportunity. And hopefully, I'm praying that we're not screwing it up too bad. And he's probably cringing right now listening to this if he's listening to the stream right now. I'd like to send out a preemptive apology to him as well.
Yeah. Thank you to all of our listeners.
Shouts to the BinRiff Forum.
Yeah, thank you to all of our listeners who are bearing with us on this horrible, horrible escapade into mediocrity.
Escapade into mediocrity. I think that's the tagline for this episode.
Episode, what episode is this? 105? 104?
105, 105.
Episode 105, the escapade into mediocrity.
Yes. We're completely going to the self-degradation. Do you have any shouts out?
None that I can think of at the moment.
Okay, so site of the week, Stank actually sent me this one. He sent it right before we started recording. We're going to give the URL out first. It's tinyurl.com/2bravopapa39. Okay. what this is the Linux kernel swear count. Essentially, what this person has done, I think it's a guy. Yes, Vidar Holen. He's essentially plotted every swear word from every kernel release from 1.0 of Linux all the way up to 2.6.12, which is the latest kernel. And he has all kinds of pretty graphs charting how many, you know, various naughty four-letter words there are in there. And I won't say them over the air because that would just be really bad. But just check it out. It's funny. Our email, as always, is radio@binrev.com. I think you should drop a line and... You know, tell us, at least, you know, if we don't suck as bad as we think we do, hey, at least, you know, try and drop us a line and say so. So we at least have some ego left by the next episode.
Yep.
And our closing music this week is, Red Eye Flight
Our closing song this week proves that you can find anything on Craigslist. We needed a song to use as a codec demo for our Asterisk presentation. And so instead of finding some commercial thing that would cost us $1 million to use, I posted on Craigslist and said, hey, any starving artists out there dying for some exposure, we'd like to use a song royalty free. We'll plug your band though. And so this one came into my email box a few minutes later. It's a song by a band from Southern California somewhere called Red Eye Flight, and the song is called Natalie. It's pretty decent.
I gotta say, it always gets stuck in my head every time I listen to it, and I'm being completely honest here.
Yeah,
and I think part of the reason we're using this for our outro music is I just really would like to plug this band because they've been really nice to us, giving us this song.
Mm-hmm.
So, for those of you still listening, I hope to see you next week if you haven't been thoroughly disgusted. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Just